April 30, 1945, in the afternoon. The German leader has just taken his own life inside his bunker. Following this event, the remaining German leaders in Berlin had a free hand to negotiate with the Soviets. Next, in this program, we will analyze in depth how the surreal talks between the Germans and the Soviets unfolded, which finally concluded 2 days later. After Hitler's death, Goebbels and Martin Bormann were left in charge of the weak position that the Germans still maintained in Berlin. With the ability to start negotiations with their Soviet enemy, both men decided to send General Krips to meet with Marshal Zhukov. That same night, at around 2300 hours, a German emissary carrying a white flag arrived at the position of the 102nd Guards Rifle Regiment of the 35th Guards Rifle Division with a package addressed to Marshal Zhukov. The German emissary requested to be allowed through so that he could address a higher staff with the intention of communicating important information. Upon reaching the headquarters of the 35th Guards Rifle Division, the German emissary delivered a written communication in Russian and German, signed by the Chief of the Chancellery, Martin Bormann. This document requested a meeting between General Krips and Marshal Zhukov to begin peace negotiations. This message was passed up the Soviet chain of command until it reached General Chuikov. After reading the document, Chuikov agreed to meet with General Krips, stating that no one above his rank would meet with him. The reply was quickly sent to the German leadership, who were forced to accept the meeting proposed by the Soviets. So, at about 3 a.m. on May 1, General Krips, accompanied by the Chief of Staff of the 56th Panzer Corps, Colonel General Bonn, an interpreter, and a soldier, crossed the front line and headed for Chuikov's position. At 3:30 hours, the German entourage of these four men arrived at the command post of Chuikov, who commanded the 8th Guards Army. After presenting his documents, General Krips stated that he wished to personally convey important secret information to Marshal Zhukov or one of his plenipotentiaries. Chuikov replied that he was authorized to receive such information on Zhukov's behalf and told Krips that he could speak to him openly on any subject. Also present in Chuikov's office were Lieutenant Generalov, Lieutenant General Pizarsky, Major General Pronin, Colonel Tolkony, Lieutenant Colonel Glapsky and Lieutenant Colonel Matusov, all of whom were attached to the 8th Guards Army and were able to communicate adequately with the Germans. Captain Kebler was also present as interpreter. General Krips handed Chuikov three documents dated April 30, 1945. An authorization to negotiate with the Russian command, a communication from Goebbels and Bormann to Stalin, and a list of the new German government and military command in accordance with Hitler's will. In the communique, Goebbels and Bormann stated that on April 30, 1945, at 3:50 p.m., Hitler had taken his own life in Berlin. According to the German leader's political will, all state power in the country would pass to the Reich president, Admiral Calden Goebbels would assume the post of chancellor, and Bormann the head of the imperial chancellery. Based on Hitler's posthumous order, Reich chancellors Goebbels and Bormann now turned to the Soviet high command with a proposal to temporarily halt military operations in Berlin itself in order to exploit the possibility of establishing the basis for peace negotiations between Germany and the Soviet Union. Negotiations between the two were justified because they were the countries that had suffered the greatest losses during the war. Chuikov then read out the list detailing who had assumed the leadership of each ministry and branch of the military. The list highlighted Marshal Vonnum as the new chief of the Buffett Light and Marshal Schoner as the new supreme commander of the land forces. After listening to Cripps, Chekhov stated that he was not authorized to hold talks with the new German government. Therefore, he stated that the matter under discussion should concern only the unconditional surrender of the Berlin garrison. To this suggestion, Cripps replied that Goebbels and Bormann could not under any circumstances carry out any act of capitulation, because, firstly, the capitulation of Berlin would practically amount to the self-liquidation of the new government founded according to Hitler's intentions. And secondly, because they also had no authorization from the Reich president, who at that time was Denich, since he was in Benklemberg and they had no communication with him. In this way, the high command present in Berlin neither wanted nor could sign the unconditional surrender of Germany. Then, Cripps reiterated that they were only requesting a provisional armistice for military operations in Berlin. This would allow communication to be established with the remaining members of the new German government who were outside Berlin to inform them of the posthumous intentions of the Führer and at the same time inform the entire German people about the news of Hitler's death and about the new government. In this way, the new German government could be consolidated and legally established, with which the Soviet government would have a legal partner to be able to carry out the final talks for the signing of the peace. In response to these words, Chuiko replied that his request would be forwarded to Zhukov. Once Marshal Zhukov received the information, he called by telephone to speak directly with Cripps. The two questions he asked him were the following: where is Hitler's body? Would the new German government simultaneously address a similar request to the command of the Allied forces, specifically to the Anglo-American troops? Replied that Hitler's body had been cremated immediately, as he had indicated in his will. Returning to the suggestion of peace talks with the Anglo-American command, Goebbels and Bormann had not had the opportunity, since at that time they were surrounded by the Red Army and simply deprived of any means of communication. At 5 o'clock, Zhukov confirmed the original statement about unconditional surrender and reported that he had contacted Moscow to inform the government about the developments in the talks. After receiving the government's reply, Chuiko asked Cripps where Himmler was at that moment. He also asked where Guderian and Guerin were. Finally, he asked what the intention was regarding the continued resistance of the Berlin garrison. Chris replied that Himmler had been excluded from the party for treason, since he had knowingly failed to carry out the Führer's order to withdraw all German troops from the Western Front to defend Berlin against the Red Army's breakthrough operations. He also told him that Himmler, without Hitler's consent, had begun talks with representatives of the governments of the United States and the United Kingdom about the capitulation of Germany. This had led Hitler to claim that Himmler planned to replace him and consolidate his hold on power. Regarding the condition of Guerin and Guderian, Cripps reported that Guderian had been seriously ill and had practically ceased to perform the functions of chief of staff since March 15, 1945. As for Guerin, he was also very ill and had been relieved of his duties. And, according to Cripps, he had gone to Bavaria. To the third question, Cripps replied that they intended to defend the capital to the last man and the last bullet. At 8 a.m. all the documents that General Cripps had brought with him were sent to Zhukov. Since the talks were dragging on, General Sokolovsky, in his capacity as deputy commander of the 1st Belarusian Front, had arrived to take part in them. Sokolovsky suggested to Cripps that he send Colonel Dufin with a Soviet representative to inform Goebbels about the negotiations and convey the demand for Berlin's surrender, in addition to establishing direct telephone communication between the two sides. At 9 a.m., Colonel Dufin, accompanied by the Soviet entourage, went to the front line. As they crossed the line, they were shot at from the German side, after which the Soviet escorts turned back. Finally, Dufin alone reached the German positions and reported on the progress of the negotiations, ordering that the telephone line be established. After informing Goebbels about the progress of the conversation, Dufin called Krips and told him that Goebbels had demanded a personal report on the results of the conversation. Before leaving back with Goebbels, Krips asked General Sokolovsky to give him a list of all the Soviet demands. These were the four conditions demanded by the Soviets. First, the rapid and unconditional surrender of the Berlin garrison. Secondly, the entire garrison would be guaranteed life, they would be allowed to keep their medals and personal belongings, and the officers would be allowed to keep their knives, and all wounded would also be treated. If this condition were accepted, and as measure number 3, the Soviet government would no longer consider the members of the new German government to be prisoners of war. Finally, the Soviet command would give the members of the government in Berlin the opportunity to contact Denich so that a rapid rapprochement could be made with the governments of the three Allied powers and peace talks could be initiated. However, the Soviet command could not guarantee that the governments of Great Britain and the United States would enter into talks with the German government. At 2 p.m. on May 1, Grips returned to the German lines. After his departure, telephone communication with the German side was maintained. Military operations in this sector of the front were not resumed until a definitive response from Goebbels was received. 4 hours later, a messenger sent by Goebbels arrived at Chekhov's command post to deliver Goebbels's official response. The letter, signed by Krips and Bormann, contained the German government's response to the Soviet suggestion, which clearly stated that they did not accept the conditions proposed by Zhukov and that military operations would therefore resume. It was at this point that Goebbels decided to take his own life, along with his wife. This response did not please Zhukov at all, and he promptly cut off communications with the Germans. However, it was Stalin himself who had to order the resumption of the assault on the reduced position that the Germans maintained in Berlin. The fact that Stalin had to order the attack is interesting, since there is no record of any interference in the assault on the city by Stalin prior to this directive. This suggests that Zhukov's forces may have taken the initial offer in the negotiations as a premature surrender and stopped most offensive actions in the city, which subsequently required Stalin to initiate combat operations. Perhaps Stalin wanted to re-emphasize that the battle would not end until all German troops in the city surrendered. In any case, Stalin's order was carried out to the letter. Although Soviet soldiers increasingly avoided the need to launch costly offensives in the city, especially in the heavily defended government district. On the night of May 1, 1945, General Helmut Wieland returned to the Futura bunker to find the place in chaos. Everyone was preparing to leave the bunker and orders were confusing. General Krips informed him that there were no further instructions for him or the troops still fighting in Berlin. Wieland understood that the city was lost and returned to his headquarters in Bänderblock. That night he gathered his staff and announced that he would surrender Berlin to the Soviets on the morning of May 2. However, he offered any unit the chance to attempt a breakout before the final surrender. In the meantime, news of Hitler's death began to spread. Many soldiers had already heard the rumors, but when it was officially confirmed, some tried to flee, others surrendered, and many decided to commit suicide, unable to accept defeat. At noon, Balin sent his deputy, Colonel Dufin, to negotiate a surrender with the Soviets. The response was swift. The German garrison would have 3 to 4 hours to organize a surrender. However, the situation was desperate. Goebbels had ordered that any soldier who attempted to surrender would be executed, although he and his family had already committed suicide the night before. At 6 p.m., Baleen, together with his staff and the last 100 German soldiers remaining in his sector, crossed the Soviet lines and surrendered. Baleen was taken before General Basilichikov, who verified his authority as commander of the defense of Berlin and asked him to draft a surrender order for the troops still holding out. The message that Baleen drafted and later narrated for broadcast throughout Berlin was the following. On April 30, 1945, the Führer took his own life, abandoning all the patriots who had sworn allegiance to him. Faithful to the Führer's orders, you German soldiers were prepared to continue the defense of Berlin despite the lack of ammunition and also despite the absurdity of continuing to fight. I order you to lay down your arms immediately. Every hour that you continue fighting will only prolong the suffering of the civilian population of Berlin and our wounded. In agreement with the high command of the Soviet troops, I demand that you all lay down your arms immediately. Baleen, general and former commander, in charge of the defense of Berlin. So, what did you think of the final negotiations for the surrender of Berlin? Do you consider the Soviet proposals fair? We are barely a week away from starting our organized trip to Berlin. If you would like to come next year, you can write to me at the email address I leave in the description. Greetings to everyone, and as I always say, see you next Sunday.